On the feature today, a look at the underlying ethical dilemma behind the Kim Davis case in the U.S. She's the Kentucky County Clerk who was sent to prison for refusing to issue same-sex marriage licenses.
Personally, I think it's mischaracterized as a religious liberty issue, principally because I think it's a Third Commandment issue. The Third Commandment, not taking the Lord's name in vain, covers what we commonly speak about in terms of swearing oaths. And the issue becomes when one is unable to perform one's duty as an officer of the state, bound by oath to uphold the Constitution, then one either has to resign or find refuge under the canopy of what's called lesser magistrates.
And in the news, a look at what ARP has been up to during the federal election campaign.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Canada's federal election campaign is in full swing now. Leaders have been crisscrossing the country, unveiling various platform planks and emphasizing issues they think will get them a majority of the votes in October. ARP has been busy, too. We've put up an election guide on the homepage. We link to it from the Lighthouse News page this week. But rather than get into the minutiae of what's on that page, you can go and check that out for yourself. I talked with ARPA's Executive Director, Mark Peniga, about the impetus behind doing this, why it was done in the first place.
The mainstream media coverage of the election campaign doesn't bring a whole lot of clarity to the real differences between the political parties. The coverage focuses on polls, personalities, the leaders' reactions to issues on the other side of the world. And to add to that, a lot of the media's issues of priority are quite different than what Reform Christians care most about. The media doesn't really care about covering parental authority or censorship of speech or prostitution or even the role of the state when it comes to taxation. So what gets left in the dust is the party's actual stance on some of the most important issues that Canada's facing. With our election surveys, we try to bring clarity by providing a snapshot of the party policy or their record on these particular issues.
Mark says the other thing that needs to be stressed is that each constituency is different. And while the election guide provides a broad overview of party platforms, there may actually be more to consider when you're casting your ballot, including the qualifications of your local candidate.
Party platforms are helpful, but it's not enough. We aren't voting for policies. At the end of the day, we're voting for real people. We need to be confident that these people have what it takes to serve in such an important position as Parliament. Do they have the character to be able to represent such a large and diverse population working with issues that are so complex? Are they interested in power or are they interested in service? Will they be following the beck and call of their leadership or do they have the tenacity to stand up for what's right? These are things you won't find in our election survey. It takes getting to know the candidates. And that's why we encourage our readers to get to know them, get involved.
Some ARPA chapters have been doing just that, getting involved, by hosting all candidates' forums in their local ridings. Three chapters, Niagara and Oxford in Ontario, and the Lethbridge Group in southern Alberta, have been getting very good responses from their local candidates. In each of those ridings, well over half of those candidates have committed to attending ARPA-sponsored forums. Peniga says while that may be surprising in one sense, the fact is that this is the result of a lot of behind-the-scenes work that goes on between elections.
A big reason why is that the local ARPA groups have gained their trust. They don't just pop up every 4 years at election time. They're active month to month in their communities. They're building real relationships with real people. The ARPA groups meet with their MP even if the MP has very different beliefs and principles than they do, and they engage respectfully. So it's not too much a surprise then that the MP and all the candidates, they're willing to take part in a function organized by a local ARPA group because they're confident they'll be treated respectfully and fairly.
I talked with organizers of each of the three forums. In Niagara, Ralph Viss is helping to put it together.
We actually have five candidates that are going to be there, Conservative, CHP, Liberal, Libertarian, and NDP. We had one express reservation that it wasn't going to be open to the whole public because we are limiting attendance to the reformed community. But other than that note, they were willing to come down to our event and tell us where they stand on the issues.
In the Oxford riding near London, Ontario, James Van Gerp is one of the organizers. He says they too will mostly limit the audience.
Our primary audience will probably be from the reformed community. When we invited the candidates, we did advise them that's kind of who we represent. So we're going to let our local churches and make them fully aware of it, but also it's open to all people. We're hosting it at a neutral location.
So what does it take to put something like this together? Melanie Campers in Lethbridge says it's really not as much work as you might think.
Basically, book a facility, get enough mics and a special light that lets the candidates know when they have to stop talking. Then we had our chairman draft an email to send out to all the candidates. After that, we just had to publicize it. So we're still working on that end of it. Sending out notices to all the bulletins, to all the Christian schools in the area.
All three organizers agreed it's a good idea to set the date for this as soon as possible. We're already almost halfway through the campaign, but with the extended window this time, there might still be an opportunity to get this done by the end of this month. And one thing more today, some good news out of Britain, where last week Parliament overwhelmingly rejected a bill that would have legalized the notion of assisted suicide. The vote was 330 to 118. During the parliamentary debate on the issue, one member of Parliament, who's also a breast cancer surgeon, told the House, quote, "I have never considered, as a doctor, that death was a good treatment for anything." When we come back, a feature interview on the Kim Davis case. She's that county clerk down in Kentucky who ended up in legal trouble for refusing to issue marriage licenses after the U.S. Supreme Court ruling on same-sex partnerships. You might be surprised at what you hear.
Life Tour is a speaking tour that will stop in 20 cities from Moncton, New Brunswick, to Vancouver, BC over 4 weeks. The goal of Life Tour is to ensure that Canada's leaders cannot ignore the injustice that is being committed against 100,000 of our preborn neighbors every single year. Join us as we work together to make sure human rights are discussed during this federal election campaign and work to bring an end to unregulated abortion in Canada. Come to an event, bring a friend, and let's change minds this election. We hope to see you at one of our 20 events in 8 provinces over 4 weeks. We'll be on the road September 23rd until October 17th. See lifetour.ca for dates and locations.
And we're back on the program. There has been quite a furor in the States about a county clerk in the relatively small town of Moorhead, Kentucky. A woman named Kim Davis. She was sent to jail late last month for refusing to legitimize same-sex marriages. And the case has set off a political firestorm down south, with even presidential candidates getting involved. On the line with me today to talk about this case is Dr. Nelson Klosterman. He's a retired professor of ethics and New Testament at Mid-America Reformed Seminary. Dr. Klosterman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Al. Good to be with you.
You run a website called Worldview Resources International. There's been quite a bit of discussion on that site about the Davis case, which may not be as cut and dried as it appears. We'll get to that in a minute. First of all, for those who might not have been following this, can you give us a little bit more background on the case?
Well, Kim Davis is an elected county clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky. And part of her task is to issue marriage licenses over her signature. And on June 26, the Supreme Court rendered its decision concerning homosexual partnerships, marriages, a decision that needs to be, by law, recognized somehow in every state of the Union. A number of states have laws that are not yet in conformity with that Supreme Court decision. Kentucky is one of them. They have a law, I think, perhaps a constitutional level, defining marriage as between one man and one woman. So Kim Davis, who is an elected official who took an oath to uphold both the U.S. Constitution and the Constitution of the state of Kentucky, finds herself caught in a dilemma. She's a professing Christian and finds that her Christian beliefs do not allow her to participate in any way in facilitating what the Supreme Court has called now a civil right, namely the right of homosexuals to marry. And as a result, despite court orders that she cooperate, she has refused and ended up spending some time in jail on a contempt of court charge, and now she's been released.
Ms. Davis says she's conscience-bound to refuse to issue those same-sex marriage licenses, and that's, of course, what got her into hot water. This has created quite a debate about the principle of religious freedom down there. It's become a hot issue politically in the Republican presidential primary, with Ted Cruz and Huckabee weighing in on this. Is this going to continue to be a big political issue heading into the elections next year?
Oh, I'm sure. The Kim Davis situation has elevated and escalated this to a front burner issue. Personally, I think it's mischaracterized as a religious liberty issue, but that is the banner that many people are waving with regard to this.
Not all Christians are of the opinion that Kim Davis is right. A lot of folks that I've, you know, read and looked at online say that, you know what, she could have just resigned from her job. Here in Canada, I personally know of a number of so-called marriage commissioners. These folks are appointed. They're not elected. Kind of like the old justice of the peace position. These folks resigned their commissions when they were told they'd have no choice on the same-sex marriage issue. How valid is that argument?
Well, I happen to share that position principally because I think it's a third commandment issue. The third commandment, not taking the Lord's name in vain, covers what we commonly speak about in terms of swearing oaths. And the issue becomes when one is unable to perform one's duty as an officer of the state, bound by oath to uphold the Constitution, then one either has to resign or find refuge under the canopy of what's called lesser magistrates or intermediate authorities. However, what many people seem not to realize is that the moment we're going to take on the government in terms of refusing to follow its dictates, the ultimate outcome of that position can be and may well be insurrection and violence. And I don't know that people are prepared for that or see that as a consequence of Kim Davis's action. Cal Thomas, I share his opinion. He's a Christian commentator who writes that Kim Davis should have resigned and gone to work with others of like mind to find a democratically plausible and acceptable way of addressing this issue rather than break the law. Law breaking is a very, very serious matter.
You mentioned the notion of lesser magistrates. That goes right back to John Calvin. Does the fact, and it rings funny to the ears of Canadians because we don't elect our municipal clerks here, they're just bureaucrats who are appointed by government, but does the fact that this is an elected rather than a staff appointed position make any difference in the context of what's right for Kim Davis?
Well, I think in some people's minds, in many people's minds it does, though I don't know that they're familiar with the phrase lesser magistrate, but they believe that her elected office represents the voice of the people, you might say. My sense of the Reformers' teaching concerning lesser magistrates, however, has to do with more magistrates in the executive or legislative or judicial branches of government. And I view Kim Davis's position, even though she's elected, I view her position as rather bureaucratic and administrative in nature. I don't mean to demean it. I just mean to identify the activity. It's an administrative position. It's not legislative or executive or judicial. And I think that what she could do is appeal to the governor of Kentucky, the legislature of Kentucky, or the judiciary to settle the apparent conflict between the Kentucky Constitution and the U.S. Constitution, because there is a conflict.
Where do you see this going ultimately? I mean, is this, you know, it's being painted in some sense as a freedom of religion case. Is this the classic competing rights debate that the courts are going to have to sort out, or does the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage trump all?
Well, the latter I do not believe. I don't believe that that ruling trumps all. In other words, I don't think it's infallible. I don't think it's unchangeable or immutable. However, here's where I differ with some of my friends. I believe that we have a democratic process that must be invoked and employed to change what I consider and most consider to be a very bad ruling on the part of the Supreme Court. And that process is one of respect for authority and respect for the law and for those in positions of authority. Where is this going to go? Well, you've already heard news reports about, I think it was a Muslim airline attendant who refused to serve alcohol. And her plea for exemption was not granted. We're going to find more of these kinds of pleas and requests for exemptions, and I think that Christians in particular need to go with eyes wide open to look for creative solutions on how to serve others and how to be of benefit and care to others while maintaining conscience. I'm very concerned about what I see as a binary approach. There are only two choices. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. Well, how about creating some compromises, some accommodations? That takes some imagination to do that. And I hope as Christians we can lend our imaginative creativity to that process.
Sir, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the conversation.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager, Brian Grimm. Technical Director, Nate Bosher. Questions or feedback? you can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpaccanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.